Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Since 2010, Mike Wolf has been the host and star of the highly rated American Pickers on the History Channel, with new episodes starting Monday at 8 Central. And joining us this morning is Mike Wolf. Welcome in, Mike.
Oh, man. Thank you for having me.
I am thrilled to have you on. I have been a fan of the show since the very, very beginning. And I'm a little bit of a collector myself, but I will tell you, this is like one of those appointment viewing shows where the family, the whole family sits down and watches the show.
Yeah, you know what? We've been very blessed in that way. We have a lot of kids that watch the show, which is amazing because now with the way everybody receives information, to have a child's attention for an hour is pretty incredible. And we have a lot of families that come in my stores in Nashville and LeClaire, Iowa, and they're like, I don't know what it is, but my 5-year-old will not stop watching your show.
<That's>
And I'm like,
awesome. That's
fascinating to me. So I absolutely love that. Yeah, we started filming the show in 2009, and then it aired in 2010. So Frank and I are kind of the old men of the History Channel now.
You are. You absolutely are. And you were born here in Chicagoland, weren't you, Mike?
Yeah, I was born Cook County, Joliet, lived there until the summer moving into Iowa. I was in fourth grade, so I lived there in Joliet until I was in third grade. And actually, that's where it all started. I was picking in the garbage. I lived on Wilshire, and I would walk a block over to Taft School.
Yeah.
And on that block walk, man, I was digging in everybody's garbage all the way over.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And it was a bike you picked. Wasn't that one of the first things you picked? Well, you were looking for bikes, weren't you?
Yeah. I couldn't afford a bike. My mom couldn't afford a bike, and I wasn't even big enough to ride a bike yet, really. But I always saw the older kids in the neighborhood flying by on them. And then when I was walking by a pile of garbage one day and saw a bike, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my opportunity here. This is it. All the stars have aligned.
And you're a bike guy. I mean, in school, I mean, you were racing actually at some point.
Yeah, I did a lot of racing, and I had a bicycle shop for a number of years. And to be honest with you, a long time ago, I mean, I closed my store in 2001, but before that I was in the business for almost 15 years. If somebody would have told me, hey, you were going to leave this industry someday, I never would have believed them. When I did live in Chicago, I was a bicycle messenger for Palace Photo on Erie.
Oh, look at that.
So, yeah, so I was the guy that would go out to all commercial shoots, and I would pick up the film rolls. I would bring them back to Palace Photo. They would develop them, and then I would ride back to where I got them from, and they would look at them in a slide form under like a microscope, you know? I mean, that was back in the day. And then I worked on Glenwood Dyer Road, Chicago Heights. Shout out to T&J Meatpack and the Lulovich brothers. I was a delivery driver with those guys for a while.
Wow. Think about what you just said about delivering photos and photographs and film and all that stuff. That's like lost to an entire generation, isn't it?
I know. Isn't it incredible that one of the industry giants of America, Kodak, could be taken down through technology and stuff? But
yeah.
You know, it's just the world we live in. There's been so much American industry go overseas, and with technology changing and understanding trends and everything, it's being in business at a small level or a large level, it's a shark pool, you know.
And
even with television, you know, television is changing dramatically with cable and people streaming now. And I look at cable television now as when people used to sit around the radio, remember, in the 30s and 40s, and they would, hey, it's 8 o'clock, let's turn on Little Abner. I mean, it's getting to that point where people don't need to watch at 8, you know. They can stream and they can watch full seasons of things, and it's a different world. It's kind of wild to be a part of it when there's such a transition happening.
You know, and it's funny, when you mention radio, radio was still pretty prevalent for 30, you know, 5 years or whatever in old-time radio and so forth, but this has been so quick, this transition to, you know, half of America doesn't watch any of the shows that are scheduled when they're actually on anymore.
Yeah, and it's changed with the way that the networks look at the numbers for the ratings. So, like, for example, the network obviously cares what our ratings are when we do new premieres, but our repeats repeat so well, what they call evergreen. So it's like the repeats do so well that they've kind of backed off on, you know, the feeling they have with where they set the bar with the ratings on premieres. And every night is a landmine. Like on Monday nights, I mean, I'm up against Monday Night Football
here.
So, you know, it's like, that's hard to compete with.
Yes, it absolutely has. Now, you mentioned starting picking bikes, but you're big into motorcycles. I mean, you are a motorcycle guy. Indian bikes, I think, are your favorite.
Yeah, I have a lot of Indians, and I've been collecting them for a long time, but yeah, Antique Archaeology, the company I started, it was really based on bicycles and motorcycles. I was finding things for museums, finding things for clients, dealing with pre-1920 American-made bicycles and motorcycles. So I specialized in that, but that wasn't enough to obviously run a complete business and be rounded with it. So I started buying a lot of other things just on the advice of a lot of dealers, you know, whether it be advertising or primitives or mid-century modern or industrial, whatever it is. I've learned a lot from other collectors and other dealers, and I think that's kind of what's cool about collecting is it's still a social thing. I mean, there's so much happening on the internet, but you can still socialize with other people and talk about your collection.
Yeah, and the history behind it and some of the personal connections that are behind it. And that's what I love about the show, too, is, I mean, you're digging deep into people's lives, and this is what Dad used to do, and Grandpa used to run this, and he used to work here, and there's great stories. And you can't get that other than sitting down with these families and while you're picking and talking to them about the history behind all this stuff.
Yeah, it's hands-on history with the item, but it's also hands-on history with the people that we pick. But to be honest with you, that's why it took me so long to get the show on the air, because I was pitching the show from more of the human element, saying, hey, it's about story, it's about discovery, and it's about relationships. And they're like, no, it's got to be about the money, and if it's not about the money, then we're passing. So that was really the hang-up. And when you watch our first, you know, seasons from, like, 1 to 3, you can really see the evolution of how we pull away from the money. When we first started airing the show and making the show, you know, I was very green at it, and I was pressured into, in some ways, trying to make it more about the money. And then finally, the network understood just through social media and, you know, people responding to the show that, hey, it doesn't have to be about the money. And that's when it really became more about what I wanted it to be, you know, from the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows. It absolutely shows. I learned enough about the merchandise and the products, and actually over the years, knowing when you're picking porcelain signs or bikes and stuff, I'm starting to understand the value of some of this
people
stuff.
People, they're like, I didn't realize I wanted an old sign, but now I do.
Exactly.
And I'm like, of course you do. They're incredible. But yeah, it's our biggest struggle now is, I mean, after making so many shows, is that we're looking for things that kind of we step out of our box on, you know, that's not in our circle. So, you know, we'll buy other things, and to me, it's really about story. I've done incredible shows, seriously, great shows on pieces that I paid $150 for. You know, what other show can do that? You know, because everybody else is really hanging their hat on that value so strong, where Frank and I actually get to take a break sometimes and just let the contributor shine and breathe, because really it's about them and the story. And so it's nice for us when we have someone that's so passionate and so involved with these things that it takes the pressure away from us. I used to think that we had to be entertaining the whole time, and then I started realizing that to make a good show, all we need are moments, you know, and those moments are enough.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, when you go through and watch an episode and you see some of these people are very easily, you know, there's some people that are like, yeah, you can have it. Like, there's no emotional attachment. It's those moments where some of these people, because it was family history or their own history, it's hard to let some of that stuff go. But they know with, you know, barns full of products and whatever it might be, that it might be time to pass it on to somebody who will also appreciate it.
Yeah, and see, people come up to me all the time, and they're like, I love it when the guy won't sell it to you. And I'm like, wow. I do too. I said, that's what this is about. Yeah. That is the relationship I'm trying to show. And to help people understand that don't collect where does this love come from? Where do these feelings come from this, for this item?
Yeah.
And when they see that over and over again, and what an emotional journey it is for a collector, I think that's really what stands out to them and makes them keep coming back to watch the show. If it was just something like, hey, I want to buy that, and it's like, okay, buy it. But it's the true story is the people that won't sell. And I love that. I love it because it just, it's so representative of people that really, really care about our history and their family's history and their community's history.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you, people have to also realize you're a small business owner, too. So there's a lot of times, I mean, you've got some really keen negotiating skills. And, of course, you're not going to pay what the full value is because, first of all, you end up cleaning a lot of the stuff up. Some of it you end up refurbishing and so forth before you sell it. So you have to buy it at a price so that you can do the work that it needs to be done with it and then sell it for profit. You're a small business owner, essentially.
Yeah, I've been self-employed for about 26 years. And a lot of these people that collect, they've done the dance with negotiating over all these years because that's how they acquired these things. And a lot of them won't respect you unless there is some sort of negotiation. But at the end of the day, it's like both people have to feel good about the deal. If they don't feel good about the deal, then I don't feel good about the deal. And that's the biggest thing, is getting to that point in the deal or helping them understand, hey, you know, this is a great piece, but the way it's being stored right now, I know you love it, but don't love it to death. Don't take it to the point where it's beyond restoration or whatever, because we get into a lot of guys' barns where the roof is caved in, the animals are in there, and they preserved all these items. They've held on to them so close to their vest for all these years, and just, it's maybe we're the first person that goes in and says, hey, Have you seen the condition? What is this, the same condition it was in when you put it in here? And it just, it's almost kind of an eye opener and saying, hey, you know, please, if you don't sell it to us, please do something before it's completely gone.
Yeah, piece of American history that'll be lost forever. Absolutely. You know, I know what you like. That's what I've gotten to know over the years. Like, you get excited about certain products, especially bikes, bike parts. You know, I kind of know what Frank likes as I'm watching the show. I do. I totally get it.
I know. We're creatures of habit.
You are. But I will tell you, what are the other products and categories that you really, besides the bikes, what do you get excited about when you're picking?
You know, I've really started to like a lot of mid-century modern stuff. You know, if you look at the history of the items and the designers and the limited numbers that they built, some of these pieces. And I really like industrial. I like general store items. I like anything that was some sort of a point-of-sale piece, meaning like when someone walked into a store, there was a product there. How did they entice that person to be interested in that product? You know, there wasn't a salesperson there a lot of times, so it's like, how can we grab their attention? It's fascinating to me to see that artwork and to see the creativity with the displays. I like a lot of that. So what's great about, I think, my personality with collecting is I constantly am falling in love with things. You know, I'm not really fixated on just one thing. Like, my friend collected Vespa scooters, and I thought he was crazy at first. And then after I talked to him and rode one, and he explained the history to me, I fell in love with them. You know, there's not a lot of people that do that. You know, there's a lot of people that can appreciate it, but not to the point where they want to go out and buy it and own it themselves, you know?
Well, how hard is it for you when you find something you really love? Like, you're there to make money, but how hard is it to tear you away and say, no, this one's coming home with me?
It's difficult, you know, and yeah. Things have changed for us, obviously. You know, I mean, we do well with the network and everything. So I feel in some ways like, you know, I'm a corporate guy now because I work for A&E Television, which is an umbrella of history, you know.
Sure,
so,
sure.
You know, it's difficult to navigate sometimes. And we've had to recreate our business model in a lot of ways, too. Like with my stores, when people come in, probably 80% of the people that walk into the store, they're not collectors, they're just fans of the show. So we've become, in some ways, a tourism destination,
yeah.
You know, which is an interesting approach to my business that I never thought of before. So it's been, you know, we've had to really hit the ground running with new ideas of how we're going to approach our retail and how we're going to approach making the show, because now, you know, it's like everybody knows who we are. There's no way we can go to a property now and they don't know who we are. So if you notice on the show, we don't do anymore really what we call freestyling,
right,
because it's not believable to the audience, and I want it to be believable.
With your flyers, right. Right.
Yeah,
it's a whole
different thing. I mean, we do give them a flyer just to kind of remind them of this conversation that they've had with production or Danielle, but you know, that's the format of the show, and that's what my difficulty in pitching it for so long. You know, the 5 years that I pitched it, was I had all these leaves which were great ideas for a show, but I didn't have a tree. What was the format? So the flyer is actually part of the format because it happens every show.
You know, I'm always walking away learning something new about a whole different category, a product, or a whole different industry that's been silenced for years.
Yeah, it's wild to think of all the manufacturers out there, whether it be in the car industry, the motorcycle industry, the bicycle industry, the gas and oil industry, whatever industry there was, the clothing industry, and think about how many smaller manufacturers there were, whether they went under or they got bought up by the bigger companies. It's really about American ingenuity and just being entrepreneurs. You know, if you look at America's main streets, I mean, that's the root of everything in this country to me. And we travel a lot of those, and the shopkeepers and the building owners, you know, that's the backbone. I hope we never lose that. It's been, you know, pretty rough out there with jobs going overseas, and, you know, these smaller towns are really taking some big hits. So, you know, it's we see it firsthand, and it's difficult to swallow in a lot of ways. So when you look at the connection between the product, the people, the manufacturing, and the sales force, the businesses that sold it, there's such a huge historic chain there.
Well, and you put your money and your time where your mouth is too, because you're always involved in charitable causes too, and you know, you've helped save theaters and buildings and all kinds of other things, and you partnered with the National Trust, I think, about a year ago.
Yeah, the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Yeah. That was really an honor for us. Last year they did a program called This Place Matters, and it was to get younger people interested in historic preservation, meaning, okay, let's humanize these buildings. Stand in front of a building, wherever it is, or it could be even a baseball diamond, and say, this place matters to me, this is why. And it was very successful, and it was great that they came to us and wanted us to be involved with that. I've restored a lot of old buildings here in Nashville, back in Iowa, and each one is a challenge. Each one has a personality just like a human being does. But at the end of the day, it's something that lives beyond all of us.
Sure.
And when I do a building, I just think about how long it's going to be around, especially now with a daughter that's 5. I think about the world that she's going to live in way beyond us.
Right. Absolutely. No, absolutely. What else are you working on these days, Mike? You always got special projects going
on. We just sold a show with Sheryl Crow. It's like a celebrity build show. She's going to be building a house here in Nashville, so that's going to be on DIY. I also sold a show called Nashville Flip. It was on DIY. It was a restoration show. We made a show called Going Cambo, which is a young gentleman that's going to be on a Verizon streaming site. He lives in the woods in Alabama, and he's kind of like a Southern Bear Grylls. So I'm doing a lot of stuff outside of the show just because after being on television for 8 years and understanding the mechanics of it and just having ideas, I'm in the position where I can present those ideas to people that will actually listen and buy them. So, yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, congrats on that. Absolutely. Well, the new season of American Picker starts Monday at 8 Central on the History Channel. For more on Mike and some great finds you can purchase, visit his website, antiquearchaeology.com. Mike, again, love the show, and can't wait for the new season, buddy.
Thank you so much. Shout out to Chicagoland.
Thank you, sir. All right, Mike Wolf from American Pickers. News is next on 720 WGN.